This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Today's monthly jobs report fails to live up to the hype. From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and it is January 4th. Happy Friday. We've got the president's top economist talking about the labor market. We'll talk about what's next for Google after an antitrust victory. Colorado and Washington are getting ready to unleash the pot business. And the Great Bicholim War of 1640. Turns out it never happened. No idea what I'm talking about. It doesn't matter.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
This morning, the Labor Department unveiled the data on hiring for December and the latest unemployment rate. The speculation about a positive surprise turned out to be for naught. The economy added 155,000 jobs, just about what analysts had expected. After a slight upward revision for November, the unemployment rate is unchanged at 7.8%. Each month when this crucial report hits, we talk with Alan Krueger. He's a Princeton economist, and he is chair of President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors. Good to talk with you.
Nice to be with you.
So I'll point out that the Obama administration doesn't really catch the blame for the hype around this report. That was mostly related to a private report from ADP that came out yesterday. But I have to ask, does this really match your expectations?
I think it's important to look at the bigger picture. We have seen this gradual progress over the last 34 months where we've added over 5 million private sector jobs. We have a way to go to dig our way out of the hole that was created by the recession. But we're seeing continued progress.
Do you feel like we're adding the right kinds of jobs as you look behind the numbers?
You know, we have faced an issue for a very long time in the U.S. that the middle class was under stress. That's a long-term problem. I think the president has proposed a number of ways to address that, including investing more in education and making smart investments in our infrastructure, developing our domestic energy, and strengthening manufacturing. All of those types of policies, I think, will help to improve the quality of jobs and help to strengthen the middle class.
Employers who were supposedly allergic to the uncertainty around the fiscal cliff are not exactly able to breathe easy now. We seem likely to hit the same sort of partisan crisis in a couple of months. What would you say to them, maybe, to give them heart so they can start hiring more?
Well, I think if we step back, we see the president calling congressional leaders to the White House. That eventually led to bipartisan agreement that continued the tax cuts for 98% of Americans. Congress also extended unemployment insurance benefits. And overall, the package that the Congress passed will reduce the deficit by $737 billion over the next 10 years. That's an important contribution. We need to do more. But I think the business community can see that the administration has been pursuing the kinds of policies that will build a stronger economy going forward.
Alan Krueger, chair of President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors. Thank you, as always.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Not a very dramatic reaction on Wall Street to that jobs report. In fact, it's been kind of bouncing up and down this morning, so we'll play the mixed music for you. Right at this instant, the Dow is up about a tenth of a percent. The S&P 500 is up a little bit more than that. NASDAQ is flat. The Federal Trade Commission has ended its investigation of anti-competitive practices by Google. The key allegation from competitors like Microsoft and Yelp was that Google uses its search results to privilege its own services. In the end, it's a solid win for the tech company. The FTC is not requiring any major changes to Google's search or other operations. With this win behind it, Marketplace's Dan Bobkoff looks into the challenges still facing the search giant.
Google is king of search. Its market share is approaching 70% in the U.S. Still, James McQuivey, an analyst at Forrester Research, says it keeps trying to expand into other businesses. And yet, in recent years,
everything other than search that they have tried has essentially failed.
And that is a risk for Google. McQuivey says the company could find itself shut out of the next big thing. Its social network Google Plus hasn't taken off, and its foray into TV has been a bust. And even though Google rules search today, it's not that hard for users to switch. Whit Andrews is an analyst at Gartner.
If I try a different search engine, does that really affect my life that much?
And that's where new competition comes in. If products like Apple's voice search service called Siri catch on, Google could find its dominance waning.
The potential of something like Siri is tremendous if people perceive it to be something that is better than Google.
And even though the FTC has mostly given Google the all clear, Europe's regulators are still keeping their eye on the company. In New York, I'm Dan Bobkoff for Marketplace.
Dwelling on tech news for just a moment here, the end of 2012 also brought an end to one of the longest hoaxes in Wikipedia history. For 5 years, a lengthy, well-sourced Wikipedia article detailed the Bicolim conflict, an undeclared war in 1640 between Portugal and India. Last month, according to the online newspaper The Daily Dot, a curious Wikipedia user decided to actually trace the sources that were used for that article, and none of them existed. Wikipedia swiftly moved the page from its active site to sort of a wall of shame that it maintains for exposed hoaxes. No apology was issued, though, for all those middle schoolers who wrote reports on the Bicolim conflict for history class.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
An investigation into tax evasion by wealthy Americans has ended in the shutdown of a 250-year-old Swiss bank. Wegelin pleaded guilty to conspiracy to help U.S. customers evade taxes. The bank has agreed to pay more than $57 million to U.S. authorities. It's unclear yet if Wegelin and company will actually turn over the names of the Americans involved. Earlier today, the BBC's Imogene Folks talked about the case with my Morning Report colleague Jeremy Hobson. Here's Jeremy.
Well, first of all, give us the story on this bank. What exactly is the bank admitting to?
What this bank, Switzerland's oldest private bank, has admitted to is helping American clients, rich clients, put their money into Swiss bank accounts where the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, can't get at it, doesn't know the money is there. That means that these clients can keep all their money and not pay any taxes.
And now the bank says it's going to close. So what does this mean for the rest of the banking sector in Switzerland?
Well, there are 13 other banks being investigated by the US authorities on similar charges of encouraging tax evasion. One of them is Credit Suisse. It's a bank called Too Big to Fail by the Swiss government, hugely important to Switzerland's economy. So these banks are very, very worried, especially because in court in New York, Wegelin's managers clearly implicated not just Wegelin Bank, but all Swiss banks. They said this is common practice in the Swiss banking community. That has had people very, very worried here in Switzerland.
So is Switzerland at risk of losing its place in the world as a haven for money that you don't want everybody to know about, let's say?
Yes, I think so. I think many bankers would tell you it's not like that anymore. But every time we see a court case like Wegelin, we see that it is still happening. And the message of the Wegelin case is either you drop the secrecy or the bank goes.
The BBC's Imogen Folks joining us from Switzerland. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
The latest data that we got earlier this week showed home mortgage applications continue on something of a tear, both for refinances and home purchases. The trend also applies for so-called jumbo mortgages. Those are loans above $625,000. These loans are too big to be backed by Fannie and Freddie. And to get a jumbo, you're going to need some pretty good credit. Here's Marketplace's David Weinberg.
Let's say you want to buy a $1 million home, but you don't have all that money lying around. You're going to need a jumbo loan. To qualify, you'll probably have to put down a deposit of at least 30%. And then there's your credit score.
You're looking at credit scores above 750. Some lenders have an 800 credit score minimum.
Guy Sakala publishes the trade journal Inside Mortgage Finance. He says despite the tight credit market and high lending standards, there's been a noticeable surge in jumbo lending.
In fact, 2012 was the highest level in terms of dollar amount of jumbo loans and probably number of jumbo loans made since 2007.
Greg McBride is senior financial analyst at Bankrate.
Generally, banks tend to view jumbo mortgage borrowers as a very desirable customer.
He says those customers are desirable because they're often interested in other products and services offered by the bank, like retirement and investment accounts, and they have money to spend. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
In November's election, Colorado and Washington voters legalized marijuana for recreational use. Officials in those states are working on rules for stores and farms, along with figuring out how to handle quality control and tax collections. And those would-be potrepreneurs are looking at potential profits. From our entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, here's Mitchell Hartman.
I'm Jake. Hi.
This is the Greenlink Collective, a medical marijuana dispensary near downtown Seattle. Starbucks headquarters is a muffin throw away. Jake George manages the store.
So here, this is a strain called UW Purple. It's kind of famously known for being a strong indica that doesn't put you to sleep. You can see really nice hints of lavender in there.
George is quick to point out the health benefits for cancer, chronic pain, depression. But the marijuana business, it is so ripe for a recreational boom. Just look at the mind-bending munchies here.
We have a fridge that's loaded up with everything from a brownie. We've got peanut butter bliss bars. A lot of it's driven around candy because it masks the flavor very well.
State regulators may not like that candy category. Pot's only legal for adults. It's totally illegal under federal law. Still, Washington and Colorado will allow private companies to produce and distribute pot for the first time ever. Other states could follow.
My phone has been ringing off the hook with investors interested in participating in our angel investor network.
Troy Dayton runs ArcView, a cannabis industry consulting group in San Francisco.
Mark Twain said that during a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business.
Selling supplies, steady business, low risk.
Cannabis is still federally illegal, so there's even more of a reason to be in the pick and shovel side of things.
Meaning businesses that don't deal directly in leaves and buds.
Potency and purity testing, labeling, packaging, advertising and promotions.
Ancillary businesses, Dayton calls them. There are plenty of them.
Information management, like point of sale and inventory control. Banking and financial and legal and insurance and security.
And how big is the pot market? Domestic production, still mostly illegal, may be worth $40 billion a year. That's on par with some top legal crops, like soybeans. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, on this Friday, gold is a status symbol in Western culture, but nothing like it is in India. That traditional reverence for gold has now given rise to the man in the solid gold shirt. A businessman from Pimpri was already known for loading up his neck and his wrists with more gold than the members of Run-DMC put together. Now, according to the local Poon Mirror newspaper, he has commissioned a shirt made from 14,000 gold pieces. The man calls the shirt an investment, though he does evidently wear the thing around town, if the photos and videos are anything to be believed. It's also an investment, apparently, in burning calories. The shirt weighs almost 8 pounds. That is today's Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.